Open loops. Do do open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Your ears. This podcast. They go together like Ramma Lamma Lamma, Kadingity, Ding a Dong, Shoobop, Shawana Wana, Yippity, Boom De Boom. But we're speaking to your deeper mind, the one making out under the dock. Your wella 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 unconscious mind is now tuned in to its favorite late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Ah, yes, those summer nights. Going quick, huh? Very quick. It's because CERN turned on the collider again. Timelines are all messed up. But you're not messed up because you're here with me. I am your chief looper, consciousness disruptor, cultural hypnotist, curator of experience. Yes, we talk about some weird things on this show. The goal is to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and allow you to step into the highest version of yourself. Still have a weird experience describing this show to people. People go, "What is this about?" I say mind-bending. Mind-bending conversations. That's what it comes down to. I want to talk about something that bent my mind as a kid. You know, I am a little bit, maybe it's not, I don't necessarily feel that Olivia Newton-John was someone that I worshipped. She wasn't someone, I mean, I know she, there are people out there that go crazy over her, people that love her, love everything she's done. I mean, she's a legend. Grease, Let's Get Physical. I mean, obviously, and Xanadu, which we're going to talk about in a second. Big cultural. She was a cultural icon. You think of that girl turning back from the car, sitting next to John Travolta, looking at you, and you think, wow, who's this Australian with the curly hair? Can I become a bad girl as cool as her? And, you know, even though Grease has a terrible lesson in it, Olivia Newton-John still makes you love her character, which I think is a very special quality. I will say, though, I was and I still am affected by her death. And I think it's mainly because I grew up, for some reason, I think it's one of my father's favorite movies. He liked Olivia Newton-John back then, and was a huge fan of hers. I mean, I know she was very popular. Xanadu was an important movie in my life. It's weird. It's weird, I know. It was critically panned. It's not a great movie of deep substance. However, I want to talk about it for a second because it really captures the open loop spirit. We're talking an oil painting at a disco roller rink where the girls come to life. And I think just even back then, there was so much going on in that movie that played with illusion and reality, which are central themes on this show. What's real, what isn't. And Olivia Newton-John obviously being the leading force there in the song Magic, which I remember even as a kid when I was doing card tricks, and I wasn't even doing card tricks back then. I was doing, linking rings and all these tricks that my dad bought me at the magic store. When we watched Xanadu, my dad would be like, "You're going to hear the word magic in there. It's all about magic. Watch, she does magic." Remember that there's a moment in Xanadu, if you've seen it, where she goes behind something in the roller rink and then appears on the other end, and you go, "Whoa, how's that done?" A lot of non-early camera trickery done in that film. It stuck out to me. I was a kid. I loved it. I loved the main song, the number with Gene Kelly. Also, Gene Kelly's in this movie. That was my intro to Gene Kelly, and it preceded me seeing Singing in the Rain, which I think is one of the best films. Also, if you don't know, I do have a love for classic Hollywood, and Xanadu is this really weird niche film that made me learn about the 70s. I mean, I think it was the first time I heard the phrase the 70s, and my dad explained that to me. It made me nostalgic for that. I mean, it's the combination of the nostalgia, the throwback to old musicals, the mixing of genres, all the illusions, the oil paintings, which, you know, oil paintings were supposed to, at least back then, look like the actual drawing. That was the idea. My dad would be like, "Yeah, it's like 3D. That's when you use oil painting. It was a big deal." And that idea of being able to represent something that's a simulation but have it be real, well, it's the reality you're living every day, folks. So, gosh, it's a lot less pretty than an oil painting most days. However, Olivia Newton-John gave us that. Grease, secondary to me. Great film, great music, great performance. Definitely, you know, had a crush, as did everybody, on the Olivia Newton-John and that type of person. But Xanadu it wasn't even like a little boy crush on Xanadu. It was a crush on the fantasy world that movie represented. So sad that Olivia Newton-John had to go. She represented that to me. May she rest in peace. I know she was battling breast cancer for a long time, but I want to just say thank you for your contribution. Thank you to Shaping the Open Loop's reality. And speaking of reality that needs to be shaped, hey, remember Eric J. Hecker when he came on the show and talked about that directed energy weapon and his time at South Pole Station and Antarctica? It was about a year ago, September. In the show itself, I talk about, this is pretty funny, I thought it was 6 to 9 months, or, you know, but it was actually close to 11 months, which is interesting because, you know, part of the whole thing is timelines and time travel, and I definitely did not feel like that long ago, and people have said that timelines are messed up and things have shifted. You've heard people on my show talk about how CERN directly contributed to messing up the timelines. I don't know how much I believe of that. I know Eric and others definitely believe that there's time travel stuff going on. There's enough weird stuff going on, though, there to question it. And Eric recently was chatting with me and said, "You know, I've been doing this for a while now, and people still don't seem to be getting the main point." So I said, "You know what? Let's get you back on. Let's get you back on the show. I know you've talked to some great names in the business, some of the biggest names in the fringe circuit, as I like to call it. I mean, people sharing alternative stories, people sharing their own experiences with, out-of-this-world things, secret government projects, UFOs, the supernatural. I mean, all the stuff we love. Eric has talked to people and corroborated his experiences with other knowledge. So I admire him. He's putting the pieces of the puzzle together about what he saw in Antarctica in his year there. And still doing it at deciphering.tv. Deciphering My Experience, Eric J. Hecker, is coming up. He's such a great guest. Loved having him last time. It was one of the most popular episodes last year, so really stoked that he came on again. You can also watch the episode, if you'd like, on YouTube, the Open Loops Podcast YouTube channel. And if you like this show, please share this out. You know, if you can rate the show and leave a review, even a couple words always help get this content out there. I'm very grateful for you, for listening, for being here. And yeah, this is what I love doing. I love sharing these conversations with you. So here he is again, a great guest, my friend, Eric J. Hecker. Today on Open Loops, we have Eric J. Hecker, a returning champion. Just because, you know what, so many people love the last conversation, Eric.
Yeah, I've actually gotten a lot of great feedback from it, and I can see that people have been watching it a bunch.
Yeah, you know, what do you think? It's interesting, right? Because you didn't quite see the actual story, the actual you getting this contracting job to go to Antarctica. You didn't quite see anything supernatural. You didn't actually.
I did see a UFO over at the facility.
You did? Okay. I wasn't aware of that. Or at least that wasn't part of my conscious.
And I don't remember every conversation that I've had with everybody, so I don't recall, you know, every detail that we've discussed previously. But in my tales, I have definitely seen what was presenting as a giant fireball. At the time, I thought it was a meteor, except that it didn't go down. It went straight across is my, you know, recollection. And now,
yeah,
give me consideration in the past. And then also, I mean, my brain at the time, I really thought, like, if I saw a UFO, that it'd be like a disc with spinning lights around it and little green men peeking out a window waving at me. So it's only since then that I've seen things like, you know, lists of types of UFOs and illustrations thereof. And everything that I saw and described is exactly what is an item on the list.
Very interesting.
So it's like one of these things, like lots of stuff, I think, like, we learn things in our life in hindsight. You know, at the time that we experience things firsthand, we don't necessarily know everything about the circumstances that we're in. But then later on in life, as you travel down the road further and you learn things, you can look back at the places you've been and have massive aha moments.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I mean, look, I find this interesting because what we were talking about last time was really just kind of the beginning of your journey in some ways of deciphering what actually you saw there and your entire life story. But it's been over 6 months. I mean, since we did our interview, probably in the winter is when we actually sat down and did an interview. And since then, you've talked to a lot of great people. I mean, I mentioned it at the top of the show. You've talked to Michael Sala. You've talked to Stephen Greer, Brad Olson. I mean, just like really, really big names in this scene of disclosure and hidden technologies. And they certainly, I mean, Michael Sala, of course, has entire books and webinars about Antarctica and what's going on there. Tell me this. Because I know you gave me another answer too, which I think is interesting about kind of the critical thinking factor that you think people aren't experiencing based on your story. But I'll ask you this first before we critique the public too much. And me, you can critique me too for not picking up on the obvious points here. But over the last, since you've done those interviews, since we've talked even, since you've been going to conferences and speaking with people and part of the Secret Space program and whatnot, how much more has your experience been deciphered? What do you think you know now that you didn't even know back then when we first spoke?
I think from then till now, I would say I have a much firmer grasp of my own complexities.
Oh.
That these programs make it very challenging for people to decipher their experiences. It's a grand effort. In many circumstances, people refer to the activity as shadow work. So a lot of people don't get involved with it. I'm not opposed to rising to the challenges thereof, and I think I've been actively involved in doing that type of work since you and I spoke. And I think the benefit has been a greater understanding of myself and those around me, because I think there's a lot more people impacted by these programs. So it's a symbiosis. The more I know about me, the more I know about others, and vice versa. And all the while, I've been kind of just running around like Paul Revere, trying to say that, you know, the British are coming, but by a different definition. So I think people are starting to get that message. Like you mentioned, I'm talking to some of these folks that have been involved in disclosure for quite some time. And I think they're just catching what I'm saying first, because they have the depth of experience for the topics that I'm bringing up that are very peculiar. You know, the stuff that I am bringing up is not standard, you know, dinner time conversation talk, and people don't really know where to begin with it. I get that. But also from what I've been discussing with these fine researchers is that it's an act of repetition. You yourself are familiar with how the public functions with these media devices and things, and it's hard to get people's attention. It's hard to get them to really consider what you're saying. It's one thing to be able to get a line of communication with someone. It's a whole other thing to get a level of understanding.
Yeah.
And these are all challenges to disclosure and truth and helping we the people in this time period where there's obviously massive amounts of weapons of division being wielded in every direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and there, oh my gosh, so many questions about this. I mean, because it's interesting that you know, I mean, Michael Sella, as a great example, exopolitics guy, you know, really, I mean, talk to some, even Stuart Swerdlow, who you interviewed recently too.
I didn't speak with him yet.
Oh, you haven't spoken with him? Oh, I thought you did.
No, I just want to.
Stuart, if you're out there. I mean, look, you've crossed paths with the Montauk people. You've crossed paths with, you know, other secret space program people, you know, in all different levels, all different aspects. But it's interesting that I find your experience particularly interesting because it touches a lot of them. Like, it's not just Stargate, it's not just Montauk, it's not just you know, time travel and off planet Mars stuff. It's also like Admiral Byrd. I mean, it's really cross the gamut here. And yet a lot of those guys haven't been to Antarctica. Brad Olson did, but you're like the one who is actually on site there. So have you found that you are, what is the piece that you're giving some of these people?
You are kind of dancing around the topic and in the way of what I am trying to do. Like, I see like your formulated question, like, what are you up to? And in a way it is the Antarctic thing is kind of where I came on point from.
Yeah.
Because the analogy that I like to use, it would be like Antarctica in a way is like my home. I've resided there. But yet I see other people running around having grandiose conversations about my home that I know certainly sound ridiculous, but it's hard to explain to others with ease because they don't have the experience that I have.
Yeah.
But I can just only say, like, you know, I think for you, Greg, it'd be very easy for you to understand, right? If somebody said that they were from the Bornstein home and they were running around the world describing everything about the Bornstein house, but you know it's not accurate.
Right.
How do you even begin to explain to the rest of the world that the other person's not accurate?
Right.
All you can really say is, I've been there and that person sounds like a fibber. Anything more than that, they're like, oh, you're just attacking. Oh, you just agree. You know, it's, all right, okay. Believe whoever you want to believe.
Right. So this is this is very interesting. So when you are talking to, and I have to go back and listen to some of these, because you've just done so many interviews, but I'm curious, like when you hear someone be like, yeah, and also there's that area of Antarctica where the Nazis are still there. I mean, are you on the inside being like, okay, this is just, I can't even say anything. I
Well,
have to respect.
when somebody presents it, like that, where it's like, would you believe? Well, yeah, absolutely. I have no problem with the idea and people, postulating things. But when it comes to people that are saying like, I have secret agent X that won't identify himself, has zero pictures, has zero video, but he's here to tell us that there absolutely are Nazis building you up. Like, it's at some point, when do we challenge people to prove something? Is this not journalism still?
Well, I mean,
In a
and
way, like at some point you have
yeah.
to, we're trying to, in a way, to me, it's getting the truth to the masses by some definition.
Yeah.
And if everybody's saying that we're on the same page and we're all working together to get the truth to the masses, then I would say, where's the filter for the truth? Or are we just going to take everything that comes and hand it immediately to the public and say, oh, someone said it?
Right. Well, I mean, look, I don't
What,
know.
I don't have the answers.
Look, I'm gonna harp on Michael Sala for a second. Not that, I appreciate that he's out there doing what he's doing, but one of my critiques of him from a journalistic perspective is that he will use channeled information as fact and mix that in with like testimonials like yours. And I'm going, I feel like that ruins your story when you're saying that, a French alien communicator has told you that we're off planet in Jupiter and that's what Elon Musk was doing when he flew. I'm going, like, okay, Michael, I love what you're doing for the movement, but what is this? I mean, yeah, what, and you've been to these conferences. Have you even been at these conventions and looked around at people and been like, yo, some of these people are out of their minds. They're
Well,
spreading
this
complete falsehoods.
Well, I don't even think that it has to be an out of their mind thing. I think that the spreading of complete falsehood can be apparent. It has nothing to do with the lunacy at all. It has to do with the intention of whatever faction they represent.
So do you believe? Yeah, well, that's the other question, of course.
This COINTELPRO, lest everybody forgets, it never went away. And
The
the idea that,
disinfo.
the NDAA Act was signed under the Obama administration, which now allows the federal government to do what was previously illegal, and that's subsidizing the news. So ever since that administration, guess what? Everything that you're seeing in the media seems to have the whiff of federal funding.
It does kind of feel that way.
Oh, well, what do you know? I mean, the last couple of years has been really interesting what's been going on in the news with all the federal agency spokesmen we've been hearing tell us what to do with our lives. All kinds of news about illnesses and things that we've been getting. Is it possible that was propaganda and an agenda being applied?
Right, of course. Of course.
Is that not a form of mind control
Oh, it
on a mass
definitely is.
level?
It definitely
Yeah, I
is.
mean, this is MK Ultra programming. They learned how to traumatize individuals to get what they wanted, and now they've just taken those and extrapolated how to do it to masses.
Oh, man.
The McDonald's Corporation is now advertising that they're going to be looking into research and development so that they can just put their commercials into your brains while you're sleeping.
What? Oh,
It's already hit. There's already news. This is already news.
that
McDonald's can't
is
wait.
so messed up. That is so messed up.
So, Greg, if McDonald's is looking to do it right now, how long do you think that DARPA and the DoD's been doing it?
Right.
If they're going to allow McDonald's that technology, that would mean that we, the taxpayers, must have been funding the research and development for this nefarious tech to be used on us for at least a few decades.
That's probably true. That's probably true. I mean, and the amount of times I made my mom go to McDonald's for the toy and the Happy Meal tells me
Yeah,
that
as
was
if you weren't
low-key
getting a
my
signal.
that is terrible mind control. Those toys were awful. No, but yes, no, I know what you mean. I
Probably would
mean,
have been healthier to eat the toy.
Right, exactly. But yeah, okay, yeah, this is good stuff. You're giving me some good intel here. So tell me this, from the people you spoke with. I mean, I remember when you spoke with Stephen Greer initially. And for those that don't know who he is, I mean, come on, wake up here. We got Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. This is a big deal, this guy. Though some people say he's opposed. Now, everybody, this is the problem with the industry. Okay, tell me this before I get into Stephen Greer. How do you know who is controlled opposition? Do
I
you know?
don't. I have no
Okay.
idea. All I can do is engage and check. I'm totally keen with being on point. I know there's good folks out there, and I know there's bad folks out there. And the only way for me to apply discernment is to get in the mix and start throwing around.
Yeah. Have you, I mean, you don't know, you don't need to reveal who it is or if it's even any of the names I've mentioned, but is there anybody that you have an inkling that you're like, I talked about this, but this person's totally with a government agency?
Oh, one of the interviews I did recently, it was a character, he is on YouTube, goes by UFO Man, and it was a total hatchet job. They tried to basically jump my crap right from the beginning. It was a total
You think?
con job.
Wow.
It was a debacle. We had a fight right before we went on air. We had a fight on air. We had a
My
big
gosh.
fight off air. The guy still put it up on his YouTube channel, so I still shared it on my website, and everybody can take a look at it.
That
Yeah.
sounds amazing. I gotta
Yeah,
watch
I
that.
went for the throat because they were trying to be some sort of Lou Elizondo fanboy agency shills, and I called them out for it. And yeah. The audience can do with it what they want. They made lots of claims about my disrespectfulness and so on and so forth. But in reality, you punch me in the face, I'll punch you right back. That's how life works.
That's what I
They
love.
gave it their best shot and lost.
This is a New Yorker in Alaska, folks. I mean, this is like a true. Yes, I love it. I love it. No, I mean, okay. So yeah, we got some people in the comments already calling UFO Man a shill.
Oh, okay, yeah, and it was my first experience with him, so I thought he was a total con job.
That's interesting. Very
And it
interesting.
happens, it totally happens. So this COINTELPRO environment exists, and if anybody wants to see, I mean, if you watch the video that I was in with UFO Man, you'll see exactly how these factions operate. It's very telling, and watch when they do this to other people, and you'll start to learn who are the interlopers running around in the circles trying to debase the truth that is out there. There's plenty of good truth out there. But because we, the good people, aren't organized as the bad people, it's very easy for them to intermingle into the truth.
Right.
It's the easiest thing that they can do. It's also so easy for them to flood the conversation with BS, i.e., the flat Earth conversation. Look how much energy has been wasted on that topic.
Oh man, I've
It's just
had
that's
this
definitely how
guy.
it works. It's an energy dissipating topic. This is what the CIA does to just keep good-natured conversation at a minimum.
Have you ever I had that guy on my show, David Weiss. Dave Weiss.
David
Now,
Weiss. Flat Earth Dave. Yeah, he's a con job.
now he he
He
gets.
lies and says that he spoke to me, and the things that I say support what he says. I never spoke to him. He's a liar.
Yeah, that automatically gives me, I mean,
Yeah. I heard him say on a show, I think it was with Brad Olson, that he spoke to me. And it never
Oh.
occurred. And then he somehow had quotes from a conversation that we never had.
That
So
is
that right
weird.
there, I mean, I'm thoroughly convinced that everything else that he says is also a lie.
Yeah. Hey, no, certainly. I mean, if
Works
that's.
from my perspective.
I know. I know.
Besides the fact that he says silly stuff like the earth is flat.
Yes, totally. So, okay. Tell me this. Tell me this. These guys. You got your Greers, you got your Salas, Brad Olson, people that maybe you had never spoken before, you had this experience. What are some things that, given their vast knowledge of the esoteric, were there any things that they shared with you based on your experience that you're like, oh, that makes sense?
Probably more so with Dr. Greer because of the technology that I was discussing at South Pole Station. He was kind of interested in what I was stating because he obviously has intel come across his desk as well. And I was basically corroborating stuff that he was looking into, which was that there are devices that could deliver earthquakes on demand. And that was what I was getting at. So he was basically just like, thank you. Like I was looking for one of these.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It is so weird. So, okay. You've been screaming this far and wide and saying, hey, there is a directed energy weapon.
Right. Yeah, mean, yeah. Dr. Greer understands that this thing can manufacture earthquakes. We did a show on it. It's, you know, a threat that I'm trying to present to the world. You know, everybody says if somebody knew this was going on, somebody would say something. Yeah, well, here I am. I've been saying it for 2 years. You know, some folks are paying close attention, but it seems like in the grand scheme of things, I get more of the riffraff coming out of the negative COINTELPRO factions just trying to slow my roll and dissipate my energy versus what I thought was going to happen 2 years ago was I was going to just simply show up out of the woodwork, drop down some documents on the table, say the world needs to know this, good luck, fight the good fight, and then I would go away. And I didn't think that I'd have to, you know, do more than present the truth. And
yeah.
Then I realized that, well, the forum that I think that I'm presenting the truth is completely controlled and manipulated by the forces that we're all working against. So it looks like a freedom of information superhighway, but it's apparently I'm learning it's very much pay to play.
Yeah.
And I am not loaded, so I do the best that I can to communicate my information in as many directions as I can. But lo and behold, it's amazing that the information superhighway hasn't really taken off with this information.
Do you, what about these movements? Do you have any hope for, you know, there's that, what is that app called? Obviously there's Truth Social, but not even that. There are these kind of encrypted apps where people can communicate with each other. People have been talking about going off Facebook, going on Telegram, stuff like that. I mean, is there any way that the truth can rise up in other forms, or are they going to just become, are they already corrupted? I mean, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are wholly biased on this, but I would say genuinely good. I have thought about this before. My answer to the question is deciphering.tv. which is my website, because I saw the steam coming from the engines on this ship firing up years ago. We have already lost freedom of speech. That's what I just said. So now I started my own website.
I remember wasn't it down for a minute?
Yeah, I have issues. Things happen. Now it's back up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have other folks coming on because now I effectively have a broadcast studio that can fire away 24 hours a day. I'm not going to fill airtime 24 hours a day, but I'm also not looking to censor the voices of other good-intentioned people that are trying to help the rest of us understand what the truth is without all of the censorship.
Mm.
So all I can do is lead by example. I'm sorry to let everybody else know out there that I also recommend you get a website as well, because that's the cost of the freedom of your speech right now. I hate to say it, but we already lost the freedom part. It's pay to play now.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
No.
And who gets this money if we have to pay for freedom? I mean,
great question. And then if we follow the money, we should be able to get to the root of the problem at some point.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
What happens when people try to speak elsewhere otherwise? They just get other people that have invested in the media to then interpret what your voice was that you spoke freely with. And then they'll tell the whole world, oh, you know what Greg said? And you're like, no, that's not what I said. But what are you going to do? Stand on the corner screaming, that's not what I said, for the rest of your life as they reinterpret because they had the money to distribute what they said you said was?
Oh, crap. We're damned.
Right.
Right. Right. And by the way, lest anybody think that there's some, this guy saying, "Oh, documentation. What documentation?" If you go to deciphering.tv forward slash archives, you'll see. I mean, you've put some documentation. Now, is there anything here about that? I mean, there's nothing specifically about that, the neutrinos or that energy weapon, are there? Or
Oh, absolutely. If you look, it says DOM document, and that's my proof right there, that this detector also transmits. So that's it. Like that's the trans that's the keystone that something nefarious is going on and should start the conversation as to what level of nefarious. But I don't have all of the answers. I'm just letting people know that the door is open now, that we know there are certain things that can be done, and we need to investigate other possibilities as well. The earthquake capacity was what I was discussing specifically at the time with Dr. Greer. And, people, need to really take a moment and pause and understand that at the very least, there's one device that we know of now that has the ability to deliver an earthquake. Think about what that does for a nation and phone calls, Greg, you're the leader of one nation and you don't have this device. I'm the leader of a nation with this device. And we're in contract negotiations for something. And you're trying to lean on me. And I just call you up and I go, "Man, you know what, Greg? You're being really thick-headed. Take a look to your left and watch that building fall. You
Oh
still want to
my
keep
gosh.
negotiating?" And
Wow.
any of these technologies that they don't discuss publicly, whether through corporations, military industrial complex, politics, anything that they don't discuss or let us know exists isn't regulated. They can do whatever they want with it then. And think of the power that is and all of the stuff that it affords the people that have this knowledge and this power. And people oftentimes wonder, like, well, if they had this stuff, they would put it to market and they would be rich by putting it to market. Man, they're rich by not putting it to market.
That's a great point. That is a very good point.
Right? Anti-grav's been around since the 1930s, and everybody's like, "Well, why don't we have anti-grav? Because why would they give it to you?" Right? Like, what? You got to be kidding me.
Oh my gosh. Wait, who's got who do you who's holding on to anti-gravity right now? The
Oh,
elites?
there's tons, tons and tons and tons. Not us. It's like George Carlin said back in the day, it's a big giant club and you're not in it.
Exactly.
We the people keep thinking like there's one faction holding us down. And in reality, there's a war of factions operating at our demise and they just don't care. Like we're just chattel in the arrangement.
Have you had to go? I mean, look, you always appear like you're living off grid, but just your broadcast studio. But I do wonder if, the fact that you're presenting documents and being as public as you are, do you think it's just because you're telling the truth that people aren't trying to shut you? I mean, that's what Andy Bishago of Project Pegasus said. He said, "Yeah, this is what I did. I went on every show I possibly could and told my story so that if they tried to kill me or off me, it would make it look worse for them."
I can totally follow the logic. I think there is something to be said for that. But I'm going to take it 1,000 steps forward. F them. That's a program. This whole idea of being afraid that, oh, you could get killed. Screw that. That's a control mechanism. If every single one of us rose up and spoke our truth every single day in the against the face of tyranny and evil, they'd be gone tomorrow.
That's
But
interesting.
because we've been programmed to each individually feel separated and disempowered from speaking our truth, we don't do it and they remain.
I'm very much with you on this. I that feels right. It feels better.
Everybody should move every step of the day forwards with more boldness than the last. We used to teach children to be bold. When did that stop? Now we tell that we teach them to acquiesce and be like everyone else. No. We used to empower differences and strength of character.
I'm totally with you. I wonder, do you then think that, and I know it's not Nothing's, if there's anything I've learned on this show since I've started, it's that there's nothing fully black or white or all the way evil. Sometimes there are
Right.
exceptions to the rule. But
Right.
here's what I will ask you. I mean, there are people out there like, some people think this guy was kind of office rocker, like Bill Cooper, Behold a Pale Horse, Phil Schneider, who came out, was talking about alien bases. And then, very quickly, I mean, not even, who's the guy? Is it Gary Webb that was doing
Yeah,
the.
well, I think the three people that you just mentioned are heroes in the disclosure movement.
Yeah, I mean, are these guys that. Do you actually believe they were taken out? Or is that just like coincidence and a controlled narrative we're putting on them because of our fear?
Now it's funny you put it. I totally think they did get killed.
So then, how do we reconcile this?
But
How do we.
easy. Be bold in your maneuvers and never fear death. That's still the same answer. And they did what they did, and they wouldn't have changed it for the world. They did this for everyone else. And if everybody did this for everybody else all the time, there'd be less individuals having to do this. We wouldn't actually have it happen. We would just have no bad people around. We have people around like them. We have three people like this in a minority capacity in the midst of the majority. But what we should be asking ourselves is how many bad people are in the mix controlling the majority? And if we all stood up and were more emboldened, we wouldn't need people like William Cooper to write books like Behold the Pale Horse. We wouldn't need people like Gary Webb to let us know that the CIA is actually in charge of running all the drugs in our country and trading children in the process.
Oh, it is. I mean, even my gosh, I heard him on Coast to Coast the other night. The two people that wrote that book, American Cartel, about how it wasn't just one, two families with the opium crisis. This is an active Walgreens was doing this. If this is something that can be uncovered.
Anybody from New York ever hear of Genovese drugstores?
No. Tell me
You
about
never heard of
that.
Genovese drugstores
I
in
did.
New
I'm
York?
from Massachusetts originally, got here in
Ah, oh,
2007.
I'm
I
so
don't know
sorry. I
if.
thought you were
I'm
a
not
New
born and
Yorker through and
raised
through.
here.
Genovese drugstores is a big drugstore chain in the greater New York area. People have probably also heard of the Genovese crime family.
Oh, okay. That's vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I mean it's literally the same outfit.
Family. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I believe Genovese might have turned into Walgreens.
Wow. I'm not surprised at all. I'm not surprised. I mean, they. Oh, yeah. Someone says they're now Rite Aid. That's
Oh,
what
they're now
happened.
Rite Aid. Okay, fair
So,
enough.
hey, still dueling pharmaceutical. I mean, there's no question that pharmaceutical industries are some of the most corrupt,
Oh
and
my goodness,
you don't have to be a conspiracy theory person to believe that. Like, it's there. So,
Yeah, the difference between homeopathic and allopathic medicine is ridiculous. And, the fact that Western medicine will pretty much pill pop you into the grave without ever asking you what you eat on a day-to-day basis and to provide proper nutrition is absurd. It shows they really don't care about you.
Oh man, I know you used to. You told me you used to like do work in mobsters' houses. I
That's
used
correct.
to really want to dig into some. Okay, wait a minute.
Feel free.
Let's take a sidebar here from Antarctica. Give me one of the like most outrageous houses you went to and things you saw in your time.
The level of wealth is almost indescribable. There were homes that I would show up to on Long Island as the plumber. And the property was so elaborate and ornate. Like I didn't do any, I just, I would, the gate would open and I would drive down this most beautiful driveway,
Oh my gosh.
pull up to this beautiful courtyard in front of the home. And I would go to the house and I would ring the doorbell. It would immediately swing open and the entire staff of the home would be lined up in the port and starboard side to greet me. Yeah, it was, everybody, it's so wealth that everybody gets greeted by the house staff, and then the maitre d' would, introduce you to the staff and let you know that, you know, we have such and such problem, and this person can help you with this, and this person can help you with that. And, you know, the homeowner.
Is there any fear there? Do they know who they're working for? Like, what is that house staff like when you're working for a mobster?
That house particularly wasn't, that one wasn't necessarily a mobster. That was it's a different kind of mobster. Yeah. And I would say that the staff, unfortunately, in a lot of the places that I look at in hindsight, I would say was probably in a position of indentured servitude. And I would say the difference between slavery and indentured servitude is crappy pay.
Hey.
It's a sad legal precedent, right? What's a slave, Greg? What's an employee?
Oh gosh. I mean, very similar these days, but
so from a rich person's perspective, can they not still afford slaves? You used to just pay for a slave up front and you had a slave. Well, now we abolished that. Now you have to keep paying them once you get them, apparently.
Oh my gosh.
So that must be much better off for these workers.
I mean, I also wonder how you get to, like, you would think that if you were at a criminal's house, that there'd be some perks to that choice rather than just like a true Wall Street a-hole.
You mean as the plumber?
Or I just mean as like a like a servant at a mobster house. Like, there are certain things you got to keep secret.
They have better quarters. They have better food.
Yeah.
They get the amenities of the property.
Right.
To some extent.
I would actually think if you're Wall Street, you're probably going to treat your people far worse in a way.
The physical environment is plenty. The energy of it's horrible for them. They're sacrificing themselves for the money to send somewhere else. It's a conscious decision that they've made. And I would say I witnessed that environment. But it's unfortunate that these exchanges exist, because I simply look at it as wealthy people enslaving people still.
Yeah.
Just at a different rate that they can still totally afford. So in reality, like everything else in the world, slavery is illegal for poor people. Just like drugs were illegal for poor people. Speeding's illegal for poor people. Everything's illegal for poor people because rich people can afford the penalties, and they just get into politics and they legislate things that way.
Now I got to ask you this. I mean, who do you think who's buried more bodies? The people that have access to directed energy weapons or a New York City mobster?
I would say the directed energy weapons folks, if we're going to ask this question specifically, because those people, their agenda is against a larger volume of people to begin with.
They're
literally trying to impact masses, whereas the mafia is trying to be a bit more subtle. They're never intending to harm people. They're intending to just do business. Having to harm people is actually counterproductive to good business. They would rather things just go smoothly, you know? I can almost hear a mobster, you know, saying, hey, you know, if you just do what we say, everything will be all right. And they they would prefer that, right? You know, whereas the folks that are wielding these directed energy weapons are actually looking to start trouble.
Yeah. You know, I've heard the earthquake weapon, or at least Nikola Tesla perfected one. Is that similar technology? Is there a Tesla connection to
Absolutely.
This, you think?
I think it's all these technological things pretty much go back to Tesla. The device at the South Pole Station appears to be a Tesla tech type item, just on a grandiose level, and absolutely blasted the snots out of Christchurch. That was when it was firing up.
Oh, man.
When we went from construction to operations and maintenance was when they were basically dialing this thing in, and that's what took out Christchurch. They got whacked to snots.
Wow. I'm kind of intrigued by the idea that, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe you haven't gone public with this, but at this point, surely there has to have been another contractor that saw something too that might come
That's the hope.
forward.
That's the whole point of what I'm saying, and why I came out of the woodworks is that because now the government's never going to tell the truth, right? We got Lou Elizondo, Christopher Mellon, everybody in the world that used to be paid to lie to the people is now claiming they're retired and telling the truth. You've got to be kidding me. This is what people are listening to and taking as the new truth. It's totally ridiculous. So we just need to, you know, get the people that have actually been in these programs, because the only thing the government did was leave the doors open. They're still in the lying game, but they're no longer locking up the truth. So now it falls on we the people. Like you said, there's other folks like me, other contractors, other departments, other doors that can be looked in, and people just need to understand it's okay. We need to start making these topics conversational and stop marginalizing people when they try to bring these topics up, because, you know, at the very least, the news is awash with the topic from the federal government and the media. Now, don't believe a word they're saying, because it's the federal government and the media, but the fact that they're at least talking about it shows that there is now some veracity to the conversation, at least. But what I think we the people should do is now control the topic and realize, all right, the government was lying. Go away, little liar people. And now let's we the people get to the root of the problem. I kind of like what Greer was doing way back in the day when he approached Congress. It was kind of like, hey, we the people are, you know, sick of the obstacles that you guys are to the truth, and they wanted, like, you know, more information, and they didn't get it. So, I mean, you know, now all of a sudden we're supposed to believe that for some noble reason the government's become magnanimous, is going to drop the truth, and lo and behold, they didn't do it. So they already didn't do it. They had every opportunity to do it, and they didn't. And people are still ridiculously looking to the government, like, could you please give us a little bit more? That last drop you gave us didn't really have much. More crumbs, please. I'm starving.
I know. You know, there is one guy, I forget his name. He was a Republican, some congressperson, senator, I think, at that hearing a couple months back, and he was really grill. I mean, he was saying, I think he even used the word alien at one point. I mean, no one else was saying it. I remember all of our good friends, Alan Steinfeld, he did like a live watch party of that hearing, and I was one of the questions he asked during it was, is someone going to say the word extraterrestrial? Is someone going to say the A word? And nobody did except that one guy. But then you got the government defending it, and what they were saying is that very adamantly, and you can tell across their faces that they had to, it felt so forced, Eric. It was, we have no reason to believe that these are extraterrestrials. We have no reason to believe that this is any extraterrestrial presence. And I'm going, but how can you, Avi Loeb? I mean, there are people out there that, there are just so many people that say the UFOs, there is a lot of weird stuff out there that just, I don't believe you can make a blanket dismissal. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, what do you think when a government person says straight up, it's like no new taxes in a way. It's they say no. We can talk about this UFO thing, but at this time there is nothing. We've got no proof whatsoever that any of these are extraterrestrial. I mean, what is your response to that?
My response is A, we know he's a liar, and B, just address the conversation from an angle of understanding what he's trying to make you think. That's all. He's a programmer. He is speaking in programming. So just try to ascertain what the program is that he's putting at you. And the program is, there are no such thing as, we have no idea. Like, it's BS. You know, all of these years, and this is, you know, we're supposed to believe that this is the extent of what they've looked into. It's a total dog and pony show. It's a joke. Everybody should stop wasting their energy on what the government says about almost anything.
Yeah.
Lest we forget that, like, we the people are actually in charge of our lives, and all the only thing the government is supposed to do is the tasking that we allotted to them that we didn't feel like doing during our day-to-day lives. That's not a leadership role. It's a subservient position. We need to stop
Totally.
looking to them for anything.
It's a
They
very
should just
good
do their
point.
jobs, and they should be invisible in our lives effectively. They should be too busy at task. If they're not too busy at task, then they're civil servants that are wasting your money.
Right. Well, that is, you know,
Yeah,
there are a
there's
lot
way
of
too much input in our
contradictions.
lives day to day from folks that we're told are the government and or our leaders. Boy, it's fun when the civil servants steal our hard-earned taxpayer dollars and then invest it in them trying to make it sound like they're in charge of us. It's called civil, these are civil servant roles. They work for us. Nancy Pelosi works for us. Joe Biden works for us. We shouldn't be hearing so much from them. They should be too busy working. All these politicians, they get way too much time on camera. They're not working.
My gosh. I mean, I'm thinking if Nancy Pelosi knew who was looking over that energy weapon in Antarctica, I mean, would we even have these semiconductor issues? Is there a technology that is just this whole supply chain thing seems irrelevant in context of what technology they're hiding from us.
Well, it's par for the course in the chess game of life right now is that it's manufactured supply chain issues. There's no supply chain issues. There's no lack of resources on this planet. There's no lack of abundance. This is look around the cosmos. This is the most abundant thing that we can see. We have everything that we could possibly imagine at our feet, but it's just mismanaged to the benefit of the people managing us. We need to become very unmanageable very fast. That's the answer.
So when is it a win for us
Great question.
because well,
That is
this
what
is
I've been putting. I've been asking this question lately a lot because this is the confusion of the battle that we're in. Is A, our enemy doesn't let us know that we're in battle. So we don't even know how to define what a win is. And we also don't know where the front line is. If Sun Tzu was alive today, he would look at us and he would say that you are under attack by the greatest enemy ever. But I don't know who it is.
I know, Eric. I mean, there's just been well, I want to call
Which
out
is the
the
greatest, it's the greatest way to fight. We don't even know. Yeah, where who what is a win right now? Where's the front line? Who's our enemy? But
It's
we are certainly not being left alone. We're being attacked by stuff. It's just by definitions that we the people haven't had yet, and the military industrial complex is not going to fill us in on, as they're actively in the throes of war with each other all over the face of this earth for the resources that they want to sell to us.
Right. I mean, it's.
If McDonald's happened to have the technology to make you want an Egg McMuffin every time you woke up, do you think they're really going to put it to market for everybody else to have it, or do you think they're just going to sell some Egg McMuffins? And then if it turns out Burger King's espionage spy team, because lest we think that just nations do this stuff, there's corporations with bigger budgets than some small countries. So corporations also get into spying and digging in. And if all of a sudden Burger King finds out, hey, McDonald's is pumping dreams into people's heads, you think they're not going to work on it? You think there's not other factions doing this stuff for other reasons that are a little bit more important than Egg McMuffins?
I mean, you know,
Because the technology does exist. It's been around for decades.
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, you know, somebody that I wanted to follow up on from and this is on the Open Loops YouTube channel. This woman named, I don't know if you've ever connected with her, Rachel Lee. Do you know Rachel Lee at all?
It sounds familiar, but I've known
Maybe.
quite a few folks on Facebook
She
and
really resonated with the first interview when she
Oh,
said that
excellent.
you were the I don't even know what that word is. Neodymium.
Neodymium's a magnet.
You were the magnet that caught her attention. What did she say? That she said that they've been beaming on the USA solid for at least the last 4 years. She's only felt it in 2020. Major headaches at the back of her head, the soft spot at the base of her skull feels like brain swelling. I mean, we keep hearing about Havana syndrome, and these things that are just like out there that no one really still has figured out the
Exactly.
answer.
These are the dots that are on like the outer fringes of the conversation, that if we could just simply connect these dots, it would really circumnavigate the whole topic and bring everything together. The Havana syndrome was rolled out recently as a key word by the Department of Defense. So, you know, it shows that DoD employees are being attacked, negatively impacted by directed energy weapons because they're titling it Havana syndrome. Havana
Yes.
syndrome is like saying bullet holes. It would be like if we were talking about guns and DoD personnel were getting shot and had to report bullet holes. But they're playing with words now. So instead of saying reporting a directed energy weapons attack, they say if you would like to report Havana syndrome-like symptoms.
I know that is such BS. Oh
It's
my
a play on
gosh.
words, but the reality is their employees are being attacked, and the federal government has a responsibility, just like every other employer. You know, this is in the line of work for them. So workers' compensation and all that fun stuff, and you get zapped by directed energy weapons at work, they have to, you know, fill out a form, let your chain of command know.
But they still
They're
just
not
won't.
saying it's unreal.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. They're
They're
not.
not saying it's unreal.
That's at this point, it's, you know, that is why aren't we? I mean, there are a lot of issues in this country, but I would think a silent weapon that beams things in your head, like a gun, would be an issue that would matter to people.
V2K and the ability to put a voice, let's say as an example to you, Greg Bornstein, if I could listen to your thoughts for a little bit, and then I can get a bead on how you think, and I could get a recording of your voice, I could actually go to a keyboard and just start typing anything I want to show up in your head in your voice.
Oh, that's so messed
Now,
up.
it's not like a control. It's not like I would type in and be like, go to McDonald's, and you would instantly get up and go to McDonald's. It doesn't work like that. But over the course of the day, like you're sitting there and you have ideas and thoughts and considerations, and in your own head, there's like a lot of Gregs in the mix. You know, should I do this? Should I do that? And you're having like a debate with yourself and making a decision. What I could do is just insert an extra voice into that. And now you have to decide whether, just like all of the other decisions that you make, but now I get to insert that, and you have to suffer whether you know thyself or not. And then I can take
Oh, man.
advantage of inserting more and more suggestions. And then in time, I can grab you with that. And then everybody knows that it's just like the commercials and power of suggestion. And if all of these folks aren't trained in the mystery schools of old that screamed from the mountaintops to know thyself, there was a reason. Because the technologies today are simply bastardizations of techniques of old. These are just
That's
energies and
right.
realities. The fact that somebody can, by technology, put a thought in your head is no different than way back when they would call someone a magician that did the same thing. He did
That's
it by
right.
technique, though.
Right. Well, that is, yeah, no, that fits a lot along with this narrative that, you know, the transhumanism movement is really just this
It's a
perverted version.
bastardization of humanism.
Yeah.
It's a denial of things that we can do without the technology, as if we needed the tech.
Do you believe consciousness ultimately can be stronger than any directed energy weapon?
I do. But I also believe that there's a unity of purpose that comes from humanity. I think there's a strong intent for many years to divide our common voice. I believe there's massive power to it. I believe that's what the cathedrals of old were constructed for. They weren't for deity, they were for the manipulation of the common voice as a massive amplifier.
Oh.
To go into an old cathedral, fill it to the brim with the seats as designed to understand that instrument, to play the common human voice in an amplifier, is a skill set we don't have anymore. And people don't understand all of the different songs and frequencies that can be done with that. That's our power on this planet. Once we are of common tongue, like the Bible talks of, once we split up and we couldn't communicate anymore, that was that we lost that unity of voice, our superpower.
Wow.
In a way, humanity could like sing its way into glory anytime it wants.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, we keep getting these structures, you know, Cathedral of Notre Dame burned. These are all our ancient texts, so to say, for our unity benefit.
Yeah, that's great. That went down Georgia Guidestones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's all kinds of oddities and stuff like that. And, you know.
And I sent you the thing about the Hoover Dam, right? I just sent you that thing where there's that, what is it, the time compactor room or something? They have a weird room that is dedicated to time in, or they did, at the Hoover Dam. So, you know, the idea that these things that you can't really explain, and then it all comes down to, well, oh, it's because of this particle physics thing we were exploring. Hint, hint, and then we get into CERN, which I know you've definitely got, even on our friend Omar's channel, Watchers Talk, which I know is going to be one of the streaming partners over on Deciphering.
Yes, absolutely. I'm looking forward to getting over some technical obstacles, as we've learned they exist today.
Yeah.
But they're just speed bumps to life, and we'll get everything dialed in. And Omar's going to be coming over to Deciphering.tv as, yeah, one of the first people to start broadcasting there.
That's awesome.
And, I'm very happy to get his voice out there. Omar's working really hard in the community for truth for the people. So I respect that. And this is exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I want to make sure that we, the people, have access to the truth, no matter how much the forces are lining against that.
So then let's get into it. I mean, not to spoil his interview with you, but CERN, Hoover Dam, these big projects involving quote-unquote particle physics that seem way too expensive and occupy too much physical space for me to go, what are they doing here? What do you think is going on?
I think there's a lot to be said for time. I have no doubt in my mind that whatever they're presenting it as is just a primary cover story for anything that the government invests in. They're too nefarious. They do it too often. Oh, we're going to get $1 billion to build a dam. It ain't just a dam. If they spend it $1 billion, they do everything like that. I've been to so many research facilities at this stage of the game, oil field work, gold mines. Everybody's full of it. Everybody's on the take, and everybody's lying to everybody so that they can profit. I mean, it's just that simple. Everybody likes to act like it's not going on, but give me a break. You know, these corporations at this stage of the game, once we gave them corporate personship, it was game on. That was kind of the end of humanity. Everybody wants to fix the world. This one really awesome step that we can do is get rid of corporate personship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's kind of the scourge of our country, is when we allowed corporations to act like they were as important as a human being.
Oh, that's so. Yeah. Why do we do this? It is just it's disgusting. And I don't even know. I mean, look, Eric, are there. I know this gets very philosophical, but and maybe it doesn't. But if we can't trust the government, if we can't trust the corporations, if we can't trust the big powers, how can the truth and the people come forward without needing to form some kind of entity that could be one day construed as another government or corporation?
I would say people need to start to learn how to know thyself, so they're not looking outwardly for the answers. Yeah, they have to stop looking outwardly for all of the answers from other people. And if they feel confusion in themselves, right, and they can't find the right answer, then they need to learn to be pausing, be patient, because that's okay too. You don't have to rush to get a wrong answer from the government or a corporation that's lying to you. It's okay to sit in stillness and learn discernment. until someone feels comfortable with getting the answers in a way that's not being spoon-fed by some profiteering agency.
Yeah.
People are too impatient nowadays. They want to hit a button and get a response from something outward. And everything outward is taking advantage of that desire and convenience. People need to separate themselves from that level of convenience and, I guess, circumnavigate their passions and desires and keep them tightly bound so that they can't be manipulated by others.
Yeah. No, I see this connection. I mean, I think it's very interesting that, you know, if I'm thinking of an Eric Hecker interview, I'm going to go, oh, I'm going to learn about technology. I'm going to learn about these secret projects and all this stuff. But what you started this interview by saying is that over the past, you know, 2 years and specifically in the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 months, is that you've learned more about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Than necessarily, and that's been more valuable than necessarily, you know, learning, oh, and then in this room they had this machine, and this room they had this device. I mean, so I guess, you know, I would love for you to kind of extrapolate that a little bit and go into how learning more about yourself became the bigger takeaway here than any other documentation that you found that corroborates your story.
I guess it's more real to me, right? That my experience, I'm understanding the complexities of the ringer that I went through and the outcome, the end result, which is me, which I'm getting a greater understanding of, but I'm observing in other people. So my concern is that I'm believing more and more of we, the people, have gone through this ringer.
Oh, wow.
So my concern is that there's a game going on, and I'm becoming aware prior to others, but I'm concerned about my fellow man. So I just want to let them know that, like, hey man, you've been through the ringer too. Something's afoot. Get ready. There's factions doing factiony things.
Yeah. I know. I'm not sure if you've, because you were talking about remembering being in school and LSD eye drops and stuff. I mean, has more stuff come back to you from your childhood?
Oh, yeah. Tons of stuff in regards to like the minor details. I mean, the story is pretty much the same with me in that capacity, but I'm getting just more. It's more vivid. It's less far away when I recall these things. And I'm getting more connections to different times and stuff. Like you had brought up Andy Bisaggio. I love listening to him because he's so clear and specific on stuff.
Yeah.
And he throws out dates and places and things. So for me, it's very interesting because I know where I was on Long Island at the time. So when he's saying like, you know, it was 1983 and this is going on and it's like, oof, you know, it gives me goosebumps because it's like, you know, I can more or less like picture myself in the proximities. I just watched a video recently, and it was some stuff that people had filmed out at Montauk.
Yeah.
And it was January 2nd of 1993. And it was just very interesting to me because it was Al Bielek, Duncan Cameron, Preston Nichols, and Helga Morrow out at Montauk. And I was thinking to myself as I'm watching this, I'm like, man, I was commuting back and forth to Montauk then at the time with regularity with this gal that I went to school with because we were lining up our senior prom weekend was going to be out at Montauk. So it just makes me like stuff like that makes me wonder because I start getting these connections and it makes me think about things and, you know, I see those dates and I start going, yeah, that's when I was going, I was driving back and forth to Montauk regularly. We were looking for places to rent, you know, we're high school kids trying to have a prom weekend. So you got to, you know, finagle like, you know, because the people look at, you know, there's not going to be any drinking, is there? Oh, no, there's not going to be any drinking. So like you have to like, you know, you had to go feel everything out and get it all dialed in. But regardless, we were making those commutes back in then. And I start thinking to myself, wow, that's really weird. Like, is it possible that I could have like just like walked past these guys then and there? Was there more to it? Was it less benign than I'm thinking?
Oh, golly. I mean, the Montauk thing is just so. And I know we've talked about this off the air before about just how deep it goes, and it's so interesting. I mean, I really, yeah, I when I hear, I guess the thing that continues to boggle me is how a collective group of people claim they were part of this project still. And their Facebook groups about it, and their people having memories about it and sharing it. I mean, it's something weird happened there, whatever
Oh,
it
for sure.
was. And we've talked about the monster before. I mean, I but yeah, there's no
The video
question.
that I saw yesterday from January 2nd, 1993, they were showing a facility that was not cleaned out yet. There was still, it looked like really good functioning utilities in there, like it could have been fired up. They went very internal. They got to the cages room. This was all presented. There was stuff intact. There were
Wow.
cells with, like, these were not blast doors for security of a military facility. These were cage doors for
Wow.
cells for something they had.
That
Like, it was
corroborates with something I heard recently too. Someone said they were
absolutely so that.
involved in the early 90s. And I was like, "Oh, I thought it was well over by then, but
No. Yes, I would say that Montauk Camp Hero surface facilities closed in 1994. And what they saw on video, what I'm going to say, what they showed on video was allowed. That was a limited hangout situation where people from the program were allowed. I mean, it was still up and running at the time, so they were given permission to go run through with the camera. It was kind of like a little
Yeah.
retirement present.
And there's no question
Go,
that.
go, go, go write a book now. Enjoy your retirement. Program's over for you. That's what they got.
Was going to say, I mean, Preston Nichols was a pervert. It
Absolutely. He,
consistently, I hear
this
this.
is this is how they targeted the roles for, like, imagine you're some evil overseer of this program and you have to find the right people for the cog in the machine you're building. Preston
Right.
was well selected.
Yeah.
He didn't have trouble abusing kids as long as you allowed him to abuse them in the way that he preferred.
Right. Now, wait, when you, I mean, did you ever meet Preston Nichols as a kid? Do you have vague memories of encountering him at all, or?
I don't have recollections of personnel.
Okay.
I have recollections of myself and other children in the program. I don't have recollections of the adults.
Interesting. Do you think it's buried somewhere? I mean, I don't know
Oh,
if you'd ever.
absolutely. Absolutely. I think that everything that I need to know is within me, and I'm on my way to getting to it.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Are there burning? I mean, look, so the big mission, the big thing that you've been saying for months, you've been saying for 2 years, that you think that people are, like, they're putting all their time travel theories and UFO theories onto this. But is the thing that you are like, hey, I've been saying this and nobody seems to get it, is it the documents on your website? Is it the energy weapon earthquake machine, or is it something else?
I don't want to stop there. I think I'm just utilizing that bit of information as my singular, like, hey, here I am with my experience. I have this bit of information that you can't take away, you can't discount. Here, it's on the table, and this bit of information supports what I'm about to speculate. And that is, there's so much advanced technology in the hands of many factions on this planet that we, the people, don't know about and suffer under every day. We
Yeah.
need to get our heads out of our asses and understand the disparity in the technologies that we are sold and the technologies that are available and being wielded by billionaires and military-industrial complex situations.
Yeah.
People are worried about countries at war with each other, and they don't realize that, like, there's, like, independent factions and families that have access to more resources than whole countries.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? That's what exists on this planet, but people are too busy paying their mortgages, watching Monday Night Football, and, you know, doing that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Worrying about which politician to pick that'll save their life next.
Oh, wow. I know.
If only I had voted correctly, my life would be perfect. I guess I'll just get a second job now since things didn't work out so well.
Oh, man. Right.
And this is how they traumatize the population, is they make it like everything's your fault, when in reality, they're the machination of demise to all of your good intentions and efforts, as they create leeching systems in society to suck away the fruits of our labor.
Oof. I got to ask you something. You know, at one point you told me that you have a vague memory of you meeting your future self. Is that still a thing? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's becoming more understood for sure. And what I'm figuring out, I really have a growing understanding that younger.
Yeah, tell me more,
when I was
please.
Younger, I was sent forward to communicate with my older self. So in a way, I was just saying to someone recently, I said, you know, at some point in my life, I feel like I'm just waiting for that aspect to walk in the room. Like, here we go. I wonder when and where it'll happen, but I know it's coming.
Wait a minute. Why now? what is the context for you communicating with your future self? I mean, was it through a computer? Did you actually remember speaking to a figure that was you? I mean...
I don't have the recollection so much as the understanding, and the idea being is that imagine these programs back in the day, the remote viewing, so on and so forth, time travel, what Andy was talking about. They're always looking for confirmations on things. It's one thing to do something, but unless you can confirm, then they don't have accuracy. You know, it's like shooting at a target blind. You need to check your fire. You need to know, was I close to the bullseye, or how do I make a correction? So this is what was going on with time travel and the such, and remote viewing. All these things needed confirmations. So from my researches, it appears, if I'm reading between the lines well, I think what the idea of some of these research teams did was they wanted to try to confirm stuff by having the youthful time traveling agents go meet their future self. There was something to that they were utilizing, and I don't know that it is the best answer, but I'm just saying I believe they believed that.
Mm.
At some point in time, they're like, hey, maybe this would work as a confirmation. I'm not suggesting that it does or doesn't. I'm just saying these researchers believed it, so they tried it. So they took a batch of kids, and they had them go meet them future selves to see. It's research. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, golly.
So I believe I was in that mix, and at some point in time, by whatever mechanism they were doing this delivery and contact, I was given contact to my older self, at which point in time, my older self told my younger self everything he knew. But now imagine the younger version. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that wouldn't make any sense to that head.
Yeah.
But now you put that in that head back in time, and now have that head walk forwards. Imagine the perspective that has as things unfold that head was informed about.
Right.
It doesn't mean that I could tell the future, because none of that stuff really made sense actually at the time. Probably sounded like junk.
Yeah. Oh, you need it. Someone's going to hypnotize you. That would be interesting.
Yeah. So now put yourself in that equation, Greg, right? So now let's say that happened to you, right? And let's under that equation, now what do you say to yourself when you meet yourself? How do you avoid that confusion again? What do you say? Or do you say everything the same again?
Well, that's why I'm wondering if this could have even been, knowing what the whole CERN, all the theories are about CERN and whatnot, it could that have even been the same world or
Could it have been the
timeline?
same science? Could they have started back then? You
Right.
know, are these the same research programs going in different directions? And you know, who knows at this point? But we have to weave the people our way out of this.
Right. You also told me that you once did plumbing at the Anderson Institute, like Peter Moon's David Anderson, the guy who
Oh, I did the, I there was a yes, there's a on Veterans Highway on Long Island, there's the Hop Hog Industrial Park, and the Anderson Institute was in there for a period that I was functionally plumbing that area. I didn't know it at the time that I was there, that the Anderson Institute was present. I found that out afterwards, but that's, I mean, a lot of the facilities that I worked at, I just showed up and I made the repair. I knew the places were weird lots of times, but it's not like I knew everything about every place that I went. But I will tell you that the Hop Hog Industrial Park on Long Island is one of the shadier facilities that I ever worked at. The trunk line, so Reuters, the info stream, the news outlet like Reuters AP. So Reuters, their main information trunk line from like over in Europe comes in like right to Hop Hog. Like that's it. It doesn't turn off. It never gets shut off. It was like I had to do a repair there one time and it was pandemonium, the amount of people that got involved because I didn't realize the facility that I was in. And I was like, all right, you know, we're going to need to just, you know, take these. It was like a big computer server room. Massive towers and towers of computer servers, right? Processing and moving info. And there was a waste line that was blocked up in the ceiling. So my due process normally is like, hey, we have to get all the stuff out from underneath that can be damaged. We're gonna have to shut this down and move this stuff. And they were flipping out like, no, absolutely not. This stuff doesn't shut down. This stuff doesn't move. This will always be on. You will figure something else out. And I was like, okay, 10-4.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You know, and that's what I learned, that I was in the Reuters main hub server room for the US.
What? Why is this big news outlet connected to a hub for time travel experimentation?
Right next door, apparently. Right? The same industrial park.
This is all kinds of weird. Okay, tell me this. Do you believe there's a place right now in the US that someone could go where they would feel? I mean, I'm sure Montauk, I know Montauk still, people claim the vortex is still there, but what's an area you're like, oh yeah, there's some shady time travel stuff going on. Check it out.
I would say there's a fistful of places on Long Island just right off the bat. Also, I would say Los Angeles by the airport, Sepulveda Boulevard, I think is an interesting place because I found myself there one day unbeknownst, and I thought it was the weirdest thing because I had heard of it before as a jump gate location.
Wow.
And I didn't really know where it was, but it was like one of those things. Like it's a detail. I always think of the movie Forrest Gump. Like it's funny the things you remember. It's a line in Forrest Gump, right?
Yes,
And I
yes.
agree with that. It's really funny the things that we remember and hold on to. So I had this recollection in my head that there was a jump gate on Sepulveda Boulevard somewhere in California. And at the time I was traveling, I was with a friend of mine. We had a layover in LA and we're like, hey, let's go for a stroll, you know, go find a dispensary, have some fun. Hey, we're on vacation. Yeehaw, right? And
Yeah.
we're walking along and all of a sudden I look up at the sign and it says Sepulveda Boulevard. And we're like at the building that's the jump gate building. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, it's all fun and games until you just realize you're on Sepulveda Boulevard.
Oh my
And that kind
gosh.
of freaked me out because I felt it was kind of really odd and peculiar and almost the level of, I don't know, it was way more than a coincidence, it seemed like to me. You
Do
know,
you
like all the stuff that
experience? I was going to
it
ask
is.
about synchronicities in your life. Do you experience a
Oh,
lot of those
tons.
right now?
Absolutely. I oftentimes say that I feel like reality's communicating with me. that it's that, like, there's like that level of synchronicities that it's like, no, that was meant for me to notice.
Interesting. Is it, you know, everybody talks about like 11/11 and those kind of, is it numbers? Is it other things?
Way more than that. Yeah, no, I mean, it's, oh geez, way more complex than that. I would say it's on a manifesting level. I'm not a master manifester. I've seen that, but it's not me. What I can observe when manifestation occurs, even when it does occur with me, but that's, I would say it has more to do with realizing that reality can be that powerful. And if you pay enough attention, you can be really pleasantly surprised what reality can present you.
Yeah.
That's the best way that I can could put it, because it's not something as simple as an 11/11. And yeah, no, it's way more complex than that. But in reality, I don't know that I could tell you a story that would convince you of my ability to manifest. You would just be like, that just sounds like a coincidence. And I would get that it would sound that way to other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but sometimes you want something to happen, and sometimes you dang near willed it to happen. And sometimes you better observe when you did do it. You know,
yeah.
it's knowing thyself. It's a pat on your own back and your skill set. We all have creative skills. We all have this ability. I'm not super special. I'm just noticing there's times where I pull it off.
Yeah.
And that's my communication with the reality around me.
It seems to be the big theme here, knowing yourself. I mean, that's going to be the,
yes.
That's going to be the way we combat mm-hmm. this technology
yes.
that is actively going against us. I mean, is that?
I just thought of a great exercise I think that we can do, right? So back in the day, we had the plank challenge, right? 30 seconds a day, you got a plank, and then a minute, and then next thing you know, you're ripped savage like the guy on the internet, right?
Right,
but
right.
What we could potentially do is as an exercise, if people just, you know, add to your meditations, can you find thoughts in your head that you think might not be your own? Can you search for an intrusive thought? Can you find one a day, two a day? Thoughts that you say, this thought doesn't serve me so well. It may not be mine.
That's really good. That's really good. Now that's synchronicity, because I've been studying a lot about beliefs right now and the way they're mm-hmm. formed and where they come from and what it takes
right.
for they.
Right.
I mean, it's a big concept in the world of mm-hmm. Hypnotherapy and neurolinguistic program. The idea of your map of reality and how you create mm-hmm. Your behaviors based on a map of reality that you currently have mm-hmm. and the limiting beliefs you have. So, I mean,
right. if it turns out that I'm right, people need to be really concerned. If it turns out that somebody could just simply add a thought into your head for your consideration, that's a very powerful tool. And if we're not aware and we don't know thyself, we're going to suffer under this technology. We're going to suffer the intentions of other people in our own decisions, our really personal internal decisions. That's a powerful technology.
Yeah. Okay, you know what? Before we end, I want to mm-hmm. ask you this. Is the fact that you're doing this then kind of a fluke? Like, if this has been all pre-programmed from the beginning, if you were supposed to go to Antarctica, mm-hmm. what are there forces that guided you to break free of a narrative besides accidentally opening up a door one day and being like, oh, wasn't supposed to see that? I mean, was that a free will? Was that what do you think are the larger forces at play that are guiding this mission at deciphering.tv?
Greg, from the best I can tell from my perspective so far, the high five goes to my younger self and my older self. And I'm just a passenger on the road they built.
Wow. Yeah, because you could have just kept going through the I mean, if you're telling me there was some MK Ultra involvement, if there was, you know, you just are a contractor, mm-hmm. a slave, as we were saying earlier, to some big corporate entity early on, I mean, you may have just gone on and been like, okay, had a good year, and now I'm back to doing this job and Maybe at the you maybe would have been a secret space program soldier at night, you know? I mean, that's how a lot of people seem to be experiencing this stuff. But instead, you're not doing that. You're broadcasting, and you're going to be broadcasting more. And as I said, we're going to link to that. Everybody check out deciphering.tv. Really good stuff there. But yeah, I mean, is there do you feel somewhat at peace that you set yourself up to be able to bring this to the public?
I'm very happy with how things are moving forwards, but I wouldn't say that I'm at peace yet because
There's so much to be done.
there's a lot of work to be done. But what I would say is that one of the greatest things that I took away from my experience at the South Pole Station, wintering at the South Pole, being there for a year, was we learned through direct firsthand experience to learn to be extremely comfortable in extremely uncomfortable circumstances. It's a skill set that I have that's almost beyond compare. I do a lot of remote work. I live in what the job recruiters refer to as austere conditions. That means good effing luck.
Right.
So this mission, so to say, now of moving forwards and fighting this fight and deciphering.tv, I'm just in it to win it. We the people, and freedom are the goal. And the more I learn, the more I see that, you know, we can get united and we can do this. So it's just a matter of getting everybody going in the right direction, finding out where that front line is.
Yes.
Finding out what a win is, defining what a win is, because we won't even admit we're losing right now. You
Yeah.
know, I would love to have a long conversation with you about what is a win. That's a great question. What's
I
the goal
know.
for humanity right now? What do we say is a win? And that way, good, we can stop wasting our resources to get to the win at that point and relax. But what's a win?
I know. And through all this, all I can think is how much I want a McFlurry. I mean, what? Whatever, it's fine. I'll break through it. All right, Eric J. Hecker of Deciphering.tv. Hey, this has been great. I always love having you on. I can't wait to find out where we are when you discover even more. And even though we're not sure what a win is, thank you for fighting the fight to even get to that point. I'm grateful for all you do, Eric, and so grateful that you came on again.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime. Eric J. Hecker, thank you, my friend. What a naturally interesting guest. You know, I recommend for everybody that wants to be a more interesting podcast guest, get recruited by Raytheon to a very far away location where the probability of having a directed energy weapon on site is at least, you know, 65%. I want to thank Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. I want to thank Rodney McGilfrey for the theme music. And I want to thank you, Shana Nana Nana. Yippity dip-de-doom.